Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling something really common, but actually quite complex when you get into it, ankle arthritis.
That's right. It affects a lot of people.
Yeah, so if you, or maybe someone you know, is dealing with that persistent ankle pain, maybe some stiffness, even a limp, well, this deep dive should be a useful shortcut to understanding what's going on.
Absolutely.
The info we're using today, it's top-notch stuff. It's peer-reviewed patient education material from orthoeducation.com. Specifically, their foot education section.
Really solid source material.
Exactly. So our mission here is to take that expert knowledge and, you know, break it down. We'll cover how it shows up, the different things that cause it, how doctors figure it out, and crucially, the different ways to treat it.
Right, from the simple stuff all the way to surgery.
And those treatment trade-offs are key.
Fundamentally, ankle arthritis means pain and swelling. It happens because the cartilage, which is basically the joint's cushion, it gets damaged or wears away.
That natural shock absorber.
Precisely. And you feel it most, really acutely, when you're standing or walking. That's why you often see people develop a noticeable limp.
It's a way to kind of protect the joint.
Right.
Right. Avoid that full, painful force.
Exactly. It's a compensation mechanism.
Okay, so let's dig into that patient experience first.
Mm-hmm.
When someone comes into the clinic, what are they usually describing beyond just saying, my ankle hurts?
Well, it's usually a classic trio. The pain, yes, but also stiffness and swelling.
Okay.
But what's really characteristic is when it happens, they almost always mention startup pain.
Ah, I've heard of that. That's the worst part, isn't it?
It really is. It's that intense stiffness and ache that hits you right after you've been sitting still for a bit. Or, like, the classic example is those first few steps getting out of bed.
Oh, yeah. That feeling where you practically have to hobble to the bathroom until things loosen up.
That's exactly it. The ankle needs time to sort of warm up before it feels even a little bit better.
And does it get better as you move more?
Not usually, unfortunately. Unlike some types of pain that ease up with activity, with ankle arthritis, the pain and especially the swelling tend to ramp up as the day goes on.
So more activity equals more pain by evening.
Generally, yes. The joint essentially complains more the more you use it.
Let's talk about that limp again.
Yeah.
It's often quite visible in severe cases.
Yeah.
You mentioned they might walk with their foot turned outwards. Why specifically that way?
Yeah, pointing the toes out. It's basically a necessary cheat, you could say.
A cheat? How so?
As the arthritis gets worse, people lose that ability to bend their foot upwards towards their shin. We call that dorsiflexion.
Right.
Now, if you can't lift your foot up properly when you swing your leg forward, you're essentially going to catch your toes or the front of your foot on the ground. You'll trip.
Ah, okay.
So turning the foot outwards is a way to get around that restriction. It allows the foot to clear the ground during the swing phase of walking without needing as much of that upward ankle bend.
That makes total sense. It's a subconscious way to avoid falling, really.
Exactly. And in really advanced arthritis, when you examine the ankle, you might even hear or feel a grinding sound when the joint moves.
Ugh, bone on bone.
That's what it often signifies, yes. Very limited motion and that grinding, or crepitus, as we call it.
So, okay, we know what it feels like, what it looks like, but why does it happen? What's actually causing that cartilage to break down?
Great question. The sources highlight six main causes, but I find it helpful to think of them in maybe three main buckets.
Okay, I like buckets. Let's hear them.
All right, bucket one, the big hit. Bucket two, the slow burn. And bucket three, the chemical attack.
Huh. Okay, the big hit sounds dramatic.
It often is. This is major trauma, and it's actually the most common reason people develop significant ankle arthritis later on.
Really? More common than just aging?
For significant debilitating ankle arthritis, yes. We're talking about things like a really bad ankle fracture, maybe involving the joint surface, or a major fracture lower down the leg, or even a dislocation.
So a big injury.
Right. That initial severe damage just sets the stage. Even if the bone heals perfectly, the joint surface itself might be permanently altered, leading to arthritis maybe years, sometimes even decades down the line.
So that old football injury or that car accident from 20 years ago could be the main culprit. Interesting.
It very often is. Okay, bucket two. The slow burn. This covers situations where the damage accumulates more gradually.
Makes sense. What's in this bucket?
Two main things here. First, recurrent injuries. Think multiple smaller sprains or injuries over a long period. A classy example is chronic ankle instability. Someone keeps rolling their ankle again and again. Each time, there's maybe a little bit of damage that adds up.
Like death by a thousand cuts, almost.
Sort of, yeah. And the second part of the slow burn is abnormal loading or alignment.
Okay, explain that.
This is about mechanics. If the ankle joint isn't loaded evenly, maybe due to the foot structure or how a previous injury healed, the pressure gets concentrated on one specific area.
Like if someone has a really pronounced flat foot.
Exactly. A severe flat foot deformity can do it. Or, say, a tibia fracture higher up the leg that healed a bit crooked. That misalignment changes the forces going through the ankle joint, wearing out the cartilage in one spot much faster than the rest.
Got it. Uneven wear and tear due to bad alignment.
Precisely. And finally, bucket three, the chemical attack.
Okay, this sounds like inflammation.
You got it. This includes three types where inflammation is the primary driver of cartilage destruction, not just mechanical wear. First is inflammatory arthritis itself. The big one here is rheumatoid arthritis.
Right, where the body's own immune system attacks the joints.
Exactly. It attacks the joint lining, the synovium, causing chronic inflammation that, over time, just erodes the cartilage. Second in this bucket is crystal arthritis.
Like gout.
Gout is the classic example, yes, or pseudogout. In these conditions, tiny sharp crystals form inside the joint fluid.
Oh.
Yeah, they cause these sudden intense flare-ups of inflammation and pain, and that inflammation also damages the joint surfaces over time, like tiny bits of shrapnel bouncing around in there.
Okay, so rheumatoid is the body attacking itself. Gout is like internal shrapnel. What's the third one?
The third is infectious arthritis, sometimes called septic arthritis. This is when bacteria actually get inside the joint space.
Like from an infection spreading or maybe an injection gone wrong?
It can happen various ways, yeah. But if bacteria set up shop in the joint, they can release enzymes that rapidly, sometimes devastatingly, destroy the cartilage. It's an orthopedic emergency, really. Needs treatment fast.
Wow, okay. That's a really clear breakdown of the why. So how do doctors actually confirm it's ankle arthritis and not something else?
Well, it starts with the physical exam, like we touched on. Looking for that swelling, comparing it to the other ankle, checking the range of motion, how much it moves, where it's restricted, and feeling or listening for that cracking or popping, the crepitus.
But the exam points towards it. It doesn't confirm it alone.
Not definitively. The real confirmation usually comes from imaging. Specifically, plain old x-rays.
Just regular x-rays.
Yes, but with a key detail. They need to be weight-bearing x-rays.
Ah, so standing up, putting your weight on it. Why is that so important?
Because that shows how the joint behaves under normal load, under gravity. When you're standing, the bones compress the remaining cartilage, or lack thereof. It gives a much truer picture of the joint space.
Okay, so what are you looking for on those weight-bearing x-rays? The sources mentioned three key signs.
That's right. Sign number one and the most direct evidence is loss of joint space. You can literally see the gap between the tibia bone above and the talus bone below getting narrower compared to a healthy ankle. Less space means less cartilage.
Simple enough. What's number two?
Number two is bone spurs, or the medical term is osteophytes.
Spurs. Okay. Those sound painful.
They can be. They're basically extra bits of bone that the body forms around the edges of the arthritic joint. It's kind of the body's attempt to stabilize things or spread the load. You often see them at the front of the ankle.
And do they correlate with symptoms?
Oh, yes. Spurs at the front often cause pain when the ankle bends upwards because they literally bump into each other. That's called impingement.
Gotcha. And the third sign?
The third sign is something called subchondral sclerosis. Subchondral just means under the cartilage. Sclerosis means hardening or increased density.
So thicker bone under the cartilage.
Or where the cartilage used to be. On the x-ray, the bone right next to the joint line looks wider, denser. It's because as the cartilage wears away, the bone underneath takes more stress and it reacts by becoming thicker and harder.
Like it's bracing for impact.
That's a good way to think about it, yeah. Now, sometimes if the x-rays are unclear or if the doctor is planning surgery and needs more detail about the bone or surrounding tissues,
then you might need more advanced imaging.
Exactly. An MRI or a CP scan might be ordered to get a closer look or answer specific questions.
Oh, giddy, a diagnosis covered. Let's switch gears to treatment. The goals seem pretty straightforward. Less pain, better function.
That's the aim, absolutely. Minimize pain and discomfort and improve the person's ability to do what they want or need to do.
And thankfully, there are often effective non-surgical options first. The sources group these into three pillars, which seems helpful. Pillar one is about limiting the force going through the joint.
Right, reducing the load. And the number one factor here often is weight loss.
Ah, yes. Does it make a big difference?
It makes a huge difference. The physics are pretty compelling. For every, say, 5 pounds of body weight you lose, you reduce the actual force going through your ankle joint by something like 10 to 15 pounds with every single step you take.
Wow, it's like a 2x or 3x multiplier. So losing 20 pounds could mean taking 40, 60, even 80 pounds less force off that painful joint constantly.
Exactly. Think about thousands of steps a day. It adds up incredibly fast. It's probably the single most impactful non-operative thing for many people.
That's really motivating. What else is in this limit the force pillar?
Using a cane is another one, but there's a specific way to use it for arthritis.
Oh, which hand do you hold it in?
You hold it in the hand opposite the painful ankle.
Opposite. That seems counterintuitive.
It does, but it works biomechanically. Holding it on the opposite side allows you to lean away from the painful side, effectively shifting your center of gravity and reducing the load on that arthritic ankle significantly more than holding it on the same side.
Huh. Good tip. Anything else for limiting force?
Soft, cushioned shoe inserts or orthotics. Something to absorb shock and dissipate some of that impact force before it hits the joint itself.
Okay, pillar one.
Yeah.
Reduce the force. Pillar two seems to be about limiting movement and maybe spreading the load out better.
Exactly. This includes things like using an ankle brace. A lace-up brace or something more rigid can physically limit the painful motion in the ankle joint,
giving it some external support.
Right. And then there's activity modification. This doesn't mean stopping everything, but being smart about it, finding ways to stand less, maybe breaking up long walks, avoiding high-impact things like running or jumping if they cause pain.
Being creative to reduce the strain.
Yeah. But maybe the most interesting thing in this pillar is specialized footwear, particularly shoes with stiff soles and a rocker bottom design.
Rocker bottom shoes. I've seen those. They look kind of curved on the bottom.
They do, like the bottom of a rocking chair, hence the name. The sole is quite rigid and that curve is key.
How does it help?
By having that stiff, curved sole, the shoe essentially does the work of rolling your foot forward. Instead of needing your ankle joint to bend significantly to push off, the shoe's shape helps you transition smoothly over your foot. It disperses the force past the ankle.
So the shoe takes over some of the ankle's job, reducing the painful motion needed.
Precisely. It can make a big difference in walking comfort.
Okay, that makes sense. And pillar three is focused on minimizing the pain response itself.
Correct. This is where medications come in. Standard things like anti-inflammatory drugs, NSAIDs like ibuprofen or naproxen or acetaminophen like Tylenol.
Managing the pain signals and inflammation.
Yes. Physical therapy also fits here, not necessarily to cure the arthritis, but to keep the muscles around the ankle strong, which helps support the joint, and also to keep the other joints in the foot and hind foot moving well. Maintaining overall flexibility is important.
Good point. And then injections.
Ah, yes, injections. Often the next step when pills and lifestyle changes aren't cutting it, there are several types people hear about.
Like cortisone shots?
Corticosteroid injections, yeah. Those are common. They deliver a strong anti-inflammatory right into the joint, can give pretty rapid, though temporary, relief.
How long does relief usually last?
It varies hugely, but maybe anywhere from a few weeks to, if you're lucky, several months. 2 to 6 months is a common range mentioned.
Okay. What about other types, like hyaluronic acid or PRP or stem cells? We hear a lot about those.
We do. Hyaluronic acid, sometimes called viscosupplementation, tries to add lubrication to the joint. PRP platelet-rich plasma uses your own blood platelets, concentrating growth factors. And stem cell injections aim to introduce cells that might help repair or reduce inflammation.
Do they work? Do they fix the underlying arthritis?
That's the crucial point the sources make. Currently, none of these injections reliably reverse or cure the arthritis itself. They don't regrow cartilage in a meaningful, lasting way in most cases of significant arthritis.
So they're mainly for symptoms?
Primarily, yes. They are symptomatic treatments. Like corticosteroids, they might provide relief for that 2 to 6 month window by reducing pain and inflammation. Many patients find this relief valuable enough that they choose to repeat the injections maybe 2 or 3 times a year to manage symptoms and delay or avoid surgery.
Okay, so injections are a management tool, not a cure. That's important to understand.
Very important.
So what happens when all these non-operative approaches just aren't enough? The pain is still limiting life, the function isn't there. then we have to talk about surgery.
Right. Surgery becomes the option when non-operative treatments fail to provide adequate relief, and the choice of which surgery really depends on how bad the arthritis is, where it is, the patient's age, activity level, and frankly, their preferences too.
It sounds like there are several distinct surgical routes. Let's break them down. Option one seems to be ankle debridement, like a clean out.
Exactly. Think of it as tidying up the joint. The main goal here is often removing those bone spurs, the osteophytes that we talked about earlier.
Especially the ones at the front causing that impingement pain.
Precisely. So the ideal person for this is usually someone with mild or maybe moderate arthritis whose main complaint is that sharp pain at the front of the ankle when they bend it up and who has those visible spurs on x-ray.
And how is it done? Minimally invasive.
It can sometimes be done arthroscopically using small incisions and a camera, especially if the spurs aren't huge. But if they're really large, sometimes an open incision is needed to get them out properly. It can definitely improve motion and reduce that specific anterior pain.
Okay, so debridement for less severe cases with spurs, what's option two? Ankle fusion or arthrodesis? This sounds more...
It is a bigger operation, yes. This is generally reserved for people with painful end-stage arthritis, meaning very little or basically no cartilage left between the main ankle bones.
And what does fusion actually mean here?
It means permanently joining the two main bones of the ankle joint, the tibia, the shin bone, and the talus, the bone underneath it, so they grow together into one solid piece of bone.
So the ankle joint itself stops moving completely?
That specific joint, yes. The tibio-talar joint motion is eliminated.
That sounds disabling. How do people walk?
That's the common concern, but it's often surprising how well people do. The key is that your foot isn't just one joint. You have many other joints below the ankle, in the hind foot, like the subtalar joint, and in the midfoot.
Oh, what?
And those remaining joints preserve a significant amount of the overall motion needed for activities like walking on flat ground and even some uneven terrain. So by eliminating the painful motion at the main ankle joint, you get significant symptom relief, stability, and often a much improved gait, even without that specific ankle bend.
So you trade motion at that one joint for pain relief and stability, relying on other foot joints.
That's the trade-off. And for end-stage arthritis, it's often a very good trade, providing predictable, long-lasting pain relief.
Okay, fusion is one major route, but then there's option three, ankle replacement or arthroplasty. The goal here is different, right? To keep the motion.
Exactly. The goal of an ankle replacement is to provide that significant pain relief while also preserving motion at the ankle joint itself, similar conceptually to a hip or knee replacement.
But the sources suggest it's maybe not as straightforward, or the results aren't always as predictable as hip or knee replacements. Why is that?
Well, the ankle is just a much tougher environment for an artificial joint. Think about it. It's a much smaller joint surface area compared to the hip or knee.
Right, carrying all that body weight.
Carrying potentially several times your body weight, especially with impact activities. The forces are incredibly high, and they're often unevenly distributed across that small area. The biomechanics are just really, really challenging.
So the implants face a tougher job.
A much tougher job. And because of that, the long-term durability and predictability of ankle replacements haven't historically matched those of hip and knee replacements, although the technology is constantly improving.
So who is typically considered a good candidate for ankle replacement, given these challenges?
Generally, we tend to see better, more reliable, long-term results in patients who are perhaps a bit older and, importantly, relatively less active. Lower demand on the implant.
Less wear and tear on the artificial joint.
Exactly. However, there's a really important group where replacement can be particularly beneficial.
Who's that?
Patients who already have fusions in other nearby joints in their hind foot, for example. If their subtalar joint, the one just below the ankle, is already fused from a previous surgery or condition.
Ah, so if other joints are already stiff.
Then preserving whatever motion you can at the main ankle joint becomes much more critical for overall foot and leg function. Fusing the ankle on top of other fusions can lead to a very stiff, sometimes awkward, gait. So in that specific scenario, replacement might be strongly preferred to maintain some flexibility.
That makes sense considering the whole foot, not just the one joint. Okay, that covers replacement. What's the final option? Option four, realignment or osteotomy?
Right, an osteotomy just means cutting a bone. This surgery isn't primarily about dealing with the damaged cartilage itself, but about fixing an underlying alignment problem that's causing the cartilage to wear out unevenly.
Like that crookedly healed tibia fracture, Or the severe flat foot we mentioned earlier in the causes.
Exactly. If you have arthritis that's really concentrated in just one part of the ankle because of a deformity, the idea is to surgically cut a bone, often the heel bone, the calcaneus, in what's called a calcaneal osteotomy, and shift its position.
How does shifting the bone help?
By changing the alignment, you effectively redistribute the load-bearing forces across the ankle joint. You shift the pressure away from the area where the cartilage is damaged and onto a part of the joint where the cartilage is hopefully still healthy, or at least healthier.
So you're trying to unload the bad spot and load the good spot to slow down the arthritis progression.
Precisely. It's often aimed at preserving the patient's own ankle joint for longer. Because of this goal, it's generally considered more suitable for younger, active patients who have this kind of localized arthritis due to malalignment, but still have areas of good cartilage worth saving.
A joint preservation strategy, essentially.
That's a good way to put it. And of course, it's important to mention that with any of these surgeries, from the debridement cleanup to the fusion, replacement, or realignment, there are potential risks and complications involved, as with any operation.
Absolutely. That needs careful discussion with the surgeon.
Wow.
Okay. We've really journeyed through the whole spectrum here.
Yeah.
From figuring out that first painful morning stiffness.
That startup pain.
All the way to these complex surgical decisions with major trade-offs. It really underscores how much goes into managing a joint that takes such a beating every day.
It really does. And I think that core challenge, especially in surgery, often boils down to that fundamental choice you might face with your doctor. Do you opt for the predictability and long-term stability of eliminating the joint motion completely with a fusion? Or do you try to preserve that motion with a replacement, accepting that the long-term outcomes might be less certain, particularly if you're younger and want to stay very active?
Fusion for stability versus replacement for motion, with caveats for both.
That's often the ultimate surgical dilemma in ankle arthritis care. It requires a really personalized discussion.
That is a powerful final thought for you, the listener, to mull over as you process all this. We have just taken a deep dive into ankle arthritis, drawing heavily from the excellent patient education resources over at orthoeducation.com, specifically their foot education section.
Great resource.
Definitely worth checking out. And please remember, this conversation is for general educational purposes. It's not medical advice. If you have concerns about your ankle or your health in general, the only way forward is to consult with a qualified healthcare professional who can assess your specific situation.